Welcome to the Safety Podcast, where we connect health, safety and environment to keep you learning, evolving and having a positive impact. Thanks for taking the time to join us for this episode. Let's get started. Hey there, thank you for joining me for this episode of the Safety Podcast, taking the time out of your day to spend a bit of time with us as we have a conversation with a leader in the HSE world. And today we have James Pomeroy, who is the Group Director for Health, Safety, Environment and Security at Lloyd's Register. If you're not familiar with James, he does a lot of proactive work here in the UK around the changing role of the HSE professional. And that's what I've got him on to the show today to talk a bit more about. Within Lloyd's Register, James has led a framework that they've developed around the expectations of professionals and how that's moving from being a specialist towards more of a business partner. And we go through some of the aspects of that and dig into some detail about what all this means for James and what they're trying to achieve within Lloyd's. We touch on some interesting themes in this one, such as letting go of certainty, which is something that's really difficult for people within the profession to do. Also, we look at how you can provide your employees with freedom within a framework, which James will explain a bit more about. And also we look at why one size fits all is a dangerous proposition when it comes to health and safety. We're at the end of January 2020 already, and I'm hoping that this podcast gives you some inspiration and lots to think about as you plan to move forward into the new year. Before we crack on with the podcast today, I wanted to let you know about a new partnership that we've set up with the team at Safety Apps. And of course, we've agreed an exclusive offer, which I want to tell you a bit about as well. But I've been doing a bit of work myself alongside James and the team at Safety Apps to further develop their health and safety software. And it's a great solution that the guys have built over there. It's really just focused on helping businesses that want an easy, cost-effective way to manage their information around risk assessments, method statements, safety audits. And also now they're adding, or have already added, a module around incident and accident reporting as well. So it continues to get better and better. The good thing is you can try a watermarked version of it. If this is something you think might be useful for your business, you can try the watermarked version of it for free, of course, to see if it works for you and see if it's worth spending the money on a subscription, which the subscription in itself is actually really good value as well. But yes, if you need a simple health and safety software solution that isn't overly expensive, but does what it says and really just keeps things, you know, basic for you and for your needs, I recommend you try the Risk Assessor app out. If you want to give it a whirl, make sure to use the link on the podcast page. Usually you save 20% on an online subscription as opposed to getting it through the app store, but we've agreed an additional 10% on top of that, so it's a 30% reduction in the price if you were to try it out and you feel like it meets your needs and you want to continue using it. So if you need a piece of software to make it easier to manage and amend your documentation when it comes to health and safety, then you can check the Risk Assessor app out for free via our link on the podcast page, and we'll look forward to hearing your feedback on it. Okay, thanks for sticking with us through the intro. Let's go and speak to James. James Pomeroy, thanks for coming on to the show to talk to us today. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you, Richard, and thank you for having me. Looking forward to the discussion.
Yes, so we've been sort of back and forth briefly about what would be relevant and useful for our audience here. I know you spend a lot of time when it comes to, and you can correct me if I'm wrong in this, but it seems to me like you put a lot of energy and effort into helping the profession and sharing your thoughts and views in terms of your journey as a director with Lloyd's Register and the team that you have and trying to push them forward. Hopefully today we're going to look at how you're going about that. How are things with your team and pushing that envelope?
Yeah, I think you've summarized it very well from my point of view. I am really passionate about seeing improvement in the profession. And we're doing a lot of work with the global team at Lloyd's Register to try and enhance the skill sets and make them more effective and ultimately make them more impactful in terms of the outcomes that we're trying to influence.
I had Anna Keane from Acre Frameworks on the show a while back, and I know we've chatted amongst one another, and you work in close proximity to those guys, and they're doing a lot of progressive work within this sphere of the changing role of EHS and what that means, which is all very interesting. And it's good to have you on today, and as we were discussing before you came on the call,
you're trying to start making these thought processes in terms of the changes in sort of how we conduct our work more practical with your own team. And hopefully you'll be able to give us a rundown of how you see all this and what it is you're actually doing with your team at Lloyd's.
Yeah, I'd be delighted to.
Starting off, we'll share, you've given me the framework that you've drafted up. I suppose you said, as you were saying to me as well, you said on the panel with Acre Frameworks, which is quite a large development team of EHS leaders across different industries, as far as I'm aware. And from some of that work you're doing, you have your own framework for the changing role. And it'd be great to talk through that, and I'll sort of hopefully delve into some bits that pique my interest. Can you give us an overview of what the thought process is behind all of that, just at a high level?
Yeah, certainly. So I've been privileged to work in the field of safety for coming up to about 25, 26 years, something of that kind of nature. In the time that I've worked in safety and environmental practice, I've seen a lot of change, particularly in the last 4 to 5 years. And that change really can be categorized into a number of areas. The first kind of change I would highlight, and this context is particularly important for some of the work that we're trying to do with the HSCS team at Lloyd's, and then also part of the more general work in terms of some of the career development work I do with Acre Frameworks. So I think the first change is in relation to the kind of world of work. I mean, we're kind of full of talk about the gig economy, about generational change at both levels of both ends of the spectrum in terms of different types of employees coming through this so-called Gen Z, but also at the other end, an aging workforce and a more demographic and diverse and representative workforce. So the traditional individuals that we've tried to keep safe and healthy at work, the nature of that risk is changing. I think secondly, the technology that we're using is, you know, quite exciting, and that's radically changing, both in terms of how people are using technology to keep people safe, and then how you're using technology at work, particularly the kind of the remote workers and what that does for kind of our ability to connect with individuals and get their inputs in terms of safety ideas. And then I think finally, and this really is a practitioner issue, we're seeing a lot of new emerging thinking. I was struck the other day, I went into my study and I looked at all of the books that I'd been taught and I'd learnt when I'd going back, you know, 20 years, like many people, done Niebuhr and all of that. Mm-hmm. And I scanned through it and I thought, you know, 2/3 of this is actually being completely debunked now. Whether it's ideas around human organizational performance or concepts such as Heinrich, many of the ideas and traditional approaches that we had are either no longer valid or increasingly being questioned. And there is a lot of new and emerging thought coming through. So if you put all that together in terms of new types of employee, contract employees coming through, different types of employees, then you look at the technology and then you then look at theories and ideas. Our profession is undergoing a huge amount of change, and we need to adapt as a consequence in terms of how we operate and how we try to influence through others. And it's that context that I think is really important.
Okay, thanks for contextualizing that for us, just to give us what you think is the base reason for the change. And you touched on demographics and our interaction with technology being big things. And all this, I guess, leads to the first part of your framework that you've drafted up in terms of changing the abilities and approach of your own team regarding expectations is about that changing, you know, expectation from the people we're working for on behalf of our customers. Can you give us an idea of what you see that changing expectation being?
Yeah, I mean, if for those who've been in the profession for a fair amount of time, that they will have been familiar with the traditional approaches to safety, whereby you go to the individual who was managing, and I use the word managing deliberately, and potentially even controlling safety, and you'd go for them for answers. And you'd go for them for certainty. And so you'd say, look, I'm going to do this project, or we're going to do this particular activity. Can you tell me, Mr. Safety, actually, you know, what I need to do? And there was a need to have certainty and to know the answers. You also went to them as a source of truth. You know, it was, they were schooled and trained in knowing technical standards and having a degree of certainty. And the profession has taken pride in knowing those technical standards. And then there's also this element about actually what we're trying to do. We're trying to standardize. We're trying to eliminate risk and avoid failure. Now, if we fast forward into 2020, actually what we're now facing is less about knowing the answers. It's about knowing the right questions and asking the right questions, because the world of work is moving so fast that you simply can't know all of the answers. And okay. Actually that's what Google exists for. So I was, you know, thinking back to looking at some of the materials that I studied on, the old Ridley's book that I had was nigh on 300 pages, and that was 300 pages of certainty. Whereas now we've got Google that can come up with the answers. So it's now, how do we ask the right questions, and how do we become curious? And then this kind of second element about knowing things and telling people. So in other words, you'd walk around, you'd do these safety tours, inspections, whatever, and you would provide advice and tell people. But now we know, you know, the world of work is about engaging and influencing through others and managing through others. So we see our role now as safety partners, as business partners, no longer as kind of the individuals enforcing or telling individuals a degree of certainty. And thirdly, I think there's this contradiction between being certain to be curious. So in the old world, we would absolutely be certain of what we're trying to do, and we would want to avoid failure. Whereas now the world of work we're in is about being curious about the theories that we use, the technology we're applying, and being curious about whether there is something in this safety differently, or human and organizational performance, or whatever new idea it is, rather than dismissing it out of hand and saying, I'm comfortable with my traditional models, about being curious. And I guess finally, this idea about, rather than avoiding failure, actually embracing it and learning from failure and thinking about vulnerability within that context also.
Yeah, we touched on that before with Anna and some of the other podcasts that we've done. The vulnerability bit, and I think that is a big part of the transition for health and safety professionals. I've actually spoke to a few people personally who have tried to really embrace that and to try and be more vulnerable with, you know, in terms of getting engagement from their audiences internally, you know, as an important parcel of that. But you mentioned there about the rate of change in the workplace and in the economy and in the development of tech and businesses as being fundamental to the reasoning behind this need for us to, you know, to move towards a different approach. James, is it a change as well in people also, do you think, in terms of their expectations within the workplace? So, you know, when I say people, I mean, are the employees expecting something different? Is that part of it, do you think?
I think so. I mean, I would highlight two elements. So firstly, there's a generational piece to this, I think, Richard, which is that the employees coming through now, so the individuals under the age of 30, that they are much, they want to be engaged in the solution. They want to actually be much more participative, because they've been educated and brought up in a world where they've been told that, you know, it's consensual to, you know, the term that our children are educated in now is to critically evaluate. And they're bringing that mindset into the world of work. So we need to be confident to actually be curious, to explain things, and actually to accept. I mean, one of the concepts around safety differently that's really quite interesting is the safety professional is not you or I, it's the individual doing the work. And I think we need to embrace that as a concept also. I think the second element that I think is why we need to change is because of the type of risks that and opportunities that we're having to look at now. So the whole kind of world of well-being and health, we can't have prescription. We can't proceduralize for some of this stuff. And actually everybody's problem or opportunity is very different. And so we need a different skill set for a different type of risk. So I think for those reasons, this idea about being certain rather than being curious and actually, you know, engaging and talking to people and respecting that they are as much the expert as we are, I think is fundamental to recognizing the contextual change that we need to make.
Yeah, I have to agree with you on that. And, you know, it comes down to, as you say, knowing that they have the expertise and, you know, other people have as many answers as anyone else, and being able to practice or, you know, to operate in that way, for me, I think is a huge factor when it comes to engagement and ultimately influence, which, as you're saying, you know, should be a big characteristic of someone who is transitioning towards being a progressive within the profession. So when we take those sort of foundational aspects of where we're needing to go here and the different expectations that exist and think about it from a more practical point of view, you've already touched on that engagement bit, and we talk a lot about listening and, you know, taking a coaching approach during some of the conversations we've had on this podcast. Getting into the nuts and bolts of it a bit more, you have a section there that I guess is the next step in terms of what are the practical aspects of that. Can you give us an insight into what your thoughts are around that, James?
Yeah, so if we kind of take some of the elements, so if we think about management systems, so when I joined Lloyds, we had a management system that was over 600 pages. Now, we don't need 600 pages, and what I did very quickly when we engaged with the team is we took the whole thing down to about 40, 50 pages. So we literally tore up 400, 500 pages and said, we don't need that level of prescription.
Yeah.
So the idea that actually the procedure, the system, you know, is the way to actually always mandate safety, I think it has a role to play, but I think we now need to think about outcomes. What outcomes are we trying to influence?
Yeah.
And actually, is the system always going to be the way we want to go? So sometimes we need to think differently. When we then think about change, it's interesting when we look at the new competency framework for IOSH, it talks about managing change. And imbued throughout that competency framework is this kind of PDCA, Plan, Do, Check, Act, which is about a very iterative approach to change, whereby you make a change, you lock the system down, and then you unfreeze it again. I don't know when something next happens. I think in this world of work we're in now, change is continuous. It's the only thing that's guaranteed is change. So for those familiar with project management approaches, we're probably going to need to have something that's much more agile, where we have less things that are fixed, where we have an approach which is constantly tweaking, where we're refining things all the time. So I think if we're looking at systems or if we're looking at managing change, we need to actually be far more agile in terms of how we adapt things and accept that change is always going to be happening all around us all the time.
Do you think then, and just thinking out loud here, could be right, could be wrong, could be completely on the wrong track, but I was listening to someone yesterday talking about how businesses, you know, in terms of general business growth, which we don't talk about enough here on the podcast, certainly from my perspective, I don't think we do anyway, but, you know, our changing roles, hopefully, and I assume you probably would agree with this as well, is that the end result of this, if we do it right, is that the HSE professional or however you want to term that person will be much more valuable to the organization. And be able to add value and becoming more agile as part of that. As I heard someone saying yesterday about businesses being ultimately stifled by their inability to innovate and change because they're so process led, which is what you're saying there, I believe. Does it mean that this new need for agility, which you're touching on, which possibly is bleeding down through, you know, that wider business conversation, does it mean that we would need to become more principle-led rather than process-led, so less prescriptive, but trying to align ourselves to certain, you know, higher-level values? Or what does that look like for you?
Well, for me, you know, when I talk about how, you know, I reduced the system down, I deliberately tore up a lot of processes and we moved to a framework. Mm-hmm. So one of the ways that we were able as a team to reduce from 650 odd pages down to 40 to 50.
I love that, by the way. That's exactly what I would be doing as well.
So. Yeah. So what it talks to is the first is that we don't prescribe a single solution unless it's really necessary. So do we need, when we look at the word proportionality, you know, when we've got a low risk and high risk, yes, you need to lock down a set way of doing a high risk. But for a low risk, can we trust people's judgment, or can we use a framework approach? We use the term freedom within a framework, which is where we give people a degree of autonomy and discretion. And if you do that, a bit like, you know, in the forest when you cut down the trees, then people will innovate more and they grow in their skill sets because they are more comfortable taking decisions. You know, if people invest in something themselves, in a local solution or a local process, then actually if they've got skin in the game, they're more likely to own it and to do something with it rather than the approach we had at Lloyd's before, which was London said this is the way it will be and we tried to standardize things around the world. Which is, there's a need to do for some things, high risk activities, ethical decisions, of course, but do we need to do that for every element? And I think if we, if we decide what is really critical, what's going to result in someone not going home, that's what we need to have good control of. And then do we need to then have such control of the lower risks? I think if we do that, then actually we can be more agile and we get the business more engaged.
For sure. And I mean, I agree with everything you're saying there around ownership, autonomy, getting buy-in. I suppose to an extent what you touched on there and what a lot of businesses have done on, in the past, and especially when you're talking about multinationals trying to standardize across, you know, huge amount of different countries and business units, that it's really micromanagement on a macro scale. I'm just sort of thinking, isn't it, to an extent, which doesn't really work very well in my experience. So, you know, it's interesting to hear you say that. I like the terminology freedom within a framework. Actually, some training and workshops I'm doing at the moment with quite a large business is doing exactly that same thing, is stepping away back to sort of simple principles, because they understand that doing what you're saying there about global standardization within a complex business across, you know, the globe is just not easy to do, and there it's much more achievable to place trust in people as long as they're all striving for the same outcomes and based around the same framework, which is what you're saying. So
I think there's also something here, Richard, in terms of if you're fortunate enough to have to kind of lead a team.
Yeah.
If the head office sees its role as developing the standards and then imposing them upon a people, people are never going to develop and they're never going to be able to then grow within the organization, because they're always going to be imposing your solution. And there's something, if we think about evolution, so if we just step back for a moment and we say, how did we develop on this planet? Well, we developed by, you know, Darwinian principles. And yet in safety, what we've said is the solution is one size fits all. And I think actually we have lacked innovation, and there's a real problem in safety in the fact that we don't have a lot of innovation. The way that we control risks and tragically the way people are getting injured or dying actually is the same way they were that was happening 20 or 30 years ago. Now, one of the reasons for that is because we have a single size fits all solution and we're not innovative enough. And so if we can allow more decision making where appropriate and take and allow some trust, then actually we can allow also some innovation to take place. And then we will see, you know, different approaches and we'll get an idea about what works best.
Definitely. I like that, sort of taking it back to, you know, the earlier principles and how humanity, I suppose, is developed. And I suppose what you're saying there, I guess, in reflection, you know, for myself, a lot of the time is that it's about control for a large part within organizations, you know, at the higher corporate levels. That feeling of control is something that people hold on to too much.
I think, don't get me wrong though. I think, Richard, there's a need for control of and standardization and uniformity of some things. I just think as a safety profession, we've taken it to the nth degree.
Too far, yeah.
I mean, when I joined Lloyd's, we had a standard method for how to set a desk up and how to do a display screen assessment. Why do we need to do that sort of stuff? That's nonsense.
Yeah, exactly. And I think as well, when you have such prescriptive, you know, standardization to the nth degree, as you're saying, and that makes people feel a bit better. But then at the same time, they push responsibility toward those on the ground without truly giving them ownership over the decision-making aspect of it, which I think is a conflict in itself. Again, just thinking out loud, your approach and what you're saying here, I believe, is much more powerful in terms of placing trust in those people to make the decisions, particularly when, you know, you're dealing with lower risk aspects. And when it comes to the significant stuff, then perhaps, you know, definitely there is a need for more scrutiny and control around that.
Yeah, and you need to be clear about what you want to standardize, what is critical, and then what is not, and then trust people and explicitly say to them, actually, these are the things that need to be done in this way, need to be reported or conducted in a certain way. These are the things that actually I explicitly want you to innovate and to try different approaches, and then we'll come together as a team and we'll decide what works. But there's another issue to over-prescribing or being far too prescriptive, and that is that you create a culture of need whereby the individuals in the field or in the sites or factories, actually, they no longer take responsibility for the risk because they just look to head office and just say, well, you tell me, Richard, what I need to do, and then I'll follow that. So it creates fundamentally the wrong culture.
I think that's quite clear in terms of what changes you think need to be made in terms of how we work. What do you think that means then, looking again, I suppose, to the broader sense and focusing on what you term scope within your own framework here? What do you think our focus is going to become, or how do you see that has already changed both internally and externally within an HSC practitioner's role, James?
So I think firstly, I'll start with kind of internal versus external. Now, the high-risk sector's done a really good job of actually doing a lot, introducing things like client safety days and engagements with their supply chain. That's not uniform across the board. And the more that we have gig workers and flexible and fluid types of employment relationships, we're going to need to actually realize we're working in matrix organizations with complex supply chains. And so a traditional approach of saying, well, you're my employee, this is our system, and I'm going to focus my efforts on you, and then, you know, contractors and suppliers probably less so. So I think our focus needs to actually accept that the organizational boundaries are increasingly becoming fluid, and the traditional approach of determining where your duty of care lies or where you see your role is changing. And I'm seeing a lot of organizations, particularly the leading organizations, making safety a differentiator by actually engaging actively with their supply chain, sharing ideas, introducing client safety forums, actually working collaboratively, both on health and on safety, which is really interesting to see that happen. But it's not universal yet. So I think the focus between internal and then external stroke sector and clients, I think, is one area within the scope that we need to look at.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I suppose going back to what I was saying initially about increasing the value of the person who manages HSES or whatever acronym you have, that is fundamental to it, I think, because if you're able to provide value, as you say, whether supply chain to clients, or, you know, to the broader industry, and integrate that really from a, you know, from a business communications and marketing point of view, it's all very positive.
It is, yeah.
Inclusive as well, yeah. But I suppose it's the difficulty is getting, does it need to be a sort of cross-functional effort, do you think, James? Or should we, you know, when you say about safety forums and things, you know, should that be siloed as something on its own, or should it be a, you know, a collective approach within a business?
It's very difficult to give a single answer to that. I think every business needs to look at actually what their route to market is. So I'll tell you our experience. We've introduced client safety forums, and we've done a number of them globally. There are a couple of real benefits that I would highlight. The first is relationship building. We start to be on first name terms with our clients and suppliers. So when things do go wrong, and in our world, they do go wrong periodically, we can pick the phone up and the relationship is much easier. I think the second area is we learn so much. So when we stand up and we have a, you know, a 1 day client safety forum, for us to stand up and say, look, this is a bit of tech we've tried, or this is an approach we've tried. And then we then give the floor to some of our key suppliers or clients and they do the same. We're scribbling at the back thinking, why didn't we think of that? You know, that's a brilliant idea. And suddenly you get shared ideas and also a collaborative approach to a problem that could be related to environmental or safety or who knows what it is. I think the
And probably everybody within that supply chain is affected in a similar manner to a degree, aren't they? And obviously, if, you know, if one domino falls, it may impact everyone. So it's in everyone's interest, isn't it?
It is. And the second thing from a, sorry, third thing from a selfish perspective is, safety folks sometimes don't have the best of relationships with business development people or maybe with the procurement teams. There may be some friction there. I've seen it a lot in my career. If you start doing client safety forums where you're actually helping them, you know, bring clients in or bring suppliers in, and whatever the motive is, suddenly they see value in an internal function that they had normally seen as a cost center. Suddenly they're starting to say, well, this is valuable. Actually, this safety function, if it can't make me money, maybe it can add value in another way. So I would encourage everybody to look at their ecosystem that they're operating in and start to map out whether it's suppliers or clients or neighbors and actually start to think at a sectorial level or geographically, who are my stakeholders and who within that ecosystem could I start to actually engage more with? Because the benefits both internally and then from a relationships perspective are huge.
Well, I mean, you just developed on what I was saying there in terms of opportunities to add more value. And I think it's an awesome opportunity, not only, as you say, externally, but in building those internal relationships, cross functions and so on. It's a really fantastic point to make. And it's something that, as you say, you know, I have as well experienced those issues around, you know, the EHS department being viewed as a cost center. And we have to think about, as you say, where are we impacting? Where can we possibly map out opportunities for growth improvement or to add value and build relationships? And as you said, you know, with it could be places that we'd never look at before, like business development or a sales team or, you know, the supply chain people, you know, and sourcing and so on. And I really do. As you say, it's just widening your horizons, isn't it? Broadening what you're looking at, as traditional versus the future here. And that contextualizes some of the transitional changes that you're talking about in terms of where we need to go to. Yeah. So awesome. I think one of the big challenges for people that keeps coming up is having influence with senior management and with the C-suite, within businesses. James, do you have anything to sort of finish this up on that, you know, maybe even a challenge that people can do to try and push that in the right direction?
Well, I would first say, what information are you giving them? And are you appreciating how time poor they are? Whenever I sit with the executive team, I will always go in there in the back of my mind with two things that I want and probably no more than two, and be really realistic about actually, you know, that the preciousness of that time. And I also think hard about what information you're taking them, because if you're taking them just the standard negative data of how many accidents have or have not happened and how many times you and types of incidents, then quite frankly, it's meaningless. The fact that we really need to focus on as a profession is how we actually give management usable information about the strength and adequacy of the controls around safety and environmental and occupational health, how strong they are, how present they are, and actually what we're actually doing in that particular sense, because there is still a pervasiveness within the safety profession of measuring accidents in the rearview mirror. And time after time, executives turn around to me and say, this is just meaningless information.
Well, that's a good point to finish on, and something you'd underline there. And what we should focus on going forward is moving from the absence of negatives towards the presence of positives. And I think that that dialogue and that approach could have a lot in terms of personal development and actually just changing your mindset towards what opportunities might be out there, James, which I think is good for people to take away from this. So thank you for giving us an insight into your framework here. It's been really valuable.
No, thank you. I hope it's of use, and more than happy to talk future times.
Excellent, excellent. Well, we'll do a bit of social media whenever this is posted out, and hopefully you'll be kicking about for any conversations or questions. And are you happy enough for anyone who's interested to hear more to reach out to you? And
yes,
if so,
certainly.
How can we do that?
Just contact me via LinkedIn or contact me via yourself, and we can explore any of the questions that people have got. I would say I don't offer any degree of certainty. The views that I've outlined are my views, and they're what I've built up over my time in safety. Not everyone will agree with it, but I do think what we do need to do as a profession is be curious about what's happening with the world of work, about what we've been using to measure safety, and the theories and ideas that we've been applying.
Yeah, absolutely. And don't be afraid to disagree. I think that's something that we haven't been great at either. So that's a great way to finish. Thanks for wrapping that up for us, James. Thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we'll chat to you soon.
No, it's a privilege. Thank you very much, Richard.
So was there anything there in that conversation you thought might be valuable for you to take in to the new year and think about when strategizing around how you might have more of an impact? There's a few things that that I picked up on, and I mentioned one or two of them at the start of the podcast, that had really stuck out for me during the chat with James. And, to begin with, we have to appreciate that the nature of risk is changing, and the modern workplace is changing rapidly with the use of technology, both for managing safety and, of course, to execute the work as well. And I don't think that's something that we should be afraid of. Sometimes, there are those that say jobs will be lost and, people will be unnecessary because of technological advancements. But with change, there always is opportunity as well. And I think it's good for us as professionals to adapt to that change and just be conscious of it as it's happening in real time. And that, may apply to a large or lesser extent, depending on what industry you're in. A part that really intrigued me during our conversation was that piece on letting go of certainty and becoming more curious about the traditional models that we use for managing work. And one of those is just being so prescriptive over how we do things and, giving instruction to people about how they do tasks, particularly tasks that are low risk. Are you doing that currently? Is there an opportunity for you to provide more autonomy to those who are carrying out the work? And what would be the results or the risks and outcomes of, making a change like that? It's a real question to ask, and if you have the courage to take a step in that direction, I think it could be really powerful, not only for the outcomes of efficiency, but also in terms of actually relationship building and giving trust to the workforce. So that's something I believe is really important. And if someone or anyone wants to hear more about creating freedom within a framework, as James mentioned, then certainly I would suggest, maybe you want to reach out to him and have a chat about that. He did say he was willing to talk to anyone who wants to know more. And I think it's something that's really interesting. One of the points he made there about the flip side of that is if you are so prescriptive and not allowing folks to make decisions and providing them with autonomy and giving them responsibility, that instead of creating a culture of innovation, you create a culture of need, and that becomes stifling and can end up, in paralysis, which isn't really benefiting the business. It's not benefiting the folks, the people that are carrying out the work, nor does it really benefit us and the perception of the profession either. So that, again, is something to take into account when we're thinking about how we can create more vibrant, more innovative workspaces. The final point I want to make on our short conversation here is about making HSE a differentiator. So what I want to ask you is, how can you this year make an impact in the relationships particularly, which this is what this podcast is really focused on when I reflected on it. It's about developing those relationships, but looking at opportunities where you wouldn't normally, between all the moving parts within your business or your project, where can you use relationship building as leverage, as a way to have an impact and actually show your value and demonstrate the value of what you do to others who you normally don't engage with? I think there is, as James pointed out, a fantastic opportunity there. And it's really a time to question, you know, how are your relationships with the different teams within your business, whether that be business development, sourcing, the procurement team, HR, etc., etc. And also a point to finish on was just to be very conscious and aware of what information that you're presenting them if you are trying to impact and influence them positively. So that's it for this podcast. I really hope you've got something to take away and use as inspiration to make a change in the coming months with your own practice and to push yourself forward along with whoever it is you're working for. And just a quick reminder that if you are looking for some help with your documentation around risk assessments, method statements, incident reporting, and audits, then go ahead and try the Risk Assessor app for free, and we'll provide a link on the podcast page for you to go through that. We'd love to hear your feedback. So thanks again. Hopefully you'll join us next time. Take care. Thank you once again for joining us for this episode. We really hope you got value from the content. If you'd like to provide us with some feedback, which we would obviously love, please take a minute to rate and review the podcast on whichever platform you're using. Also, if you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe to make sure you catch our future episodes. And of course, share it with anyone who you think may find it useful. For more free resources and to find out more about what we do, you're always welcome to visit us at safety.com. Until next time, take care and good luck.